Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Hey, everybody, it is Trags, and this week on Red Sox Beat, I welcome back an old friend. As a matter of fact, the gentleman who used to host this very podcast, he's covering the Red Sox for Mass Live. That would be the one and only Chris Cotillo. You can follow him on Twitter at Chris Cotillo, all one word, C-H-R-I-S-C-O-T-I-L-L-O. Welcome back to the podcast you used to host, Chris. How you doing?
I'm good, Trags. Thanks so much for having me. It's good to be back. I'm glad we I think it was Josh hosted it in between us, but glad the baton keeps getting passed.
Yeah, and certainly there is a lot to catch up on this second day of August as we record this. Obviously, the trade deadline came and went last Friday afternoon, not July 31st, but July 30th at 4 p.m. And yes, the Red Sox made several moves, but the biggest question is, will it be enough? They did not get Anthony Rizzo. He went to the hated Yankees. They had to settle for Kyle Schwarber. And the big catch in this, as you know, Chris, is that Kyle Schwarber is not ready to go right out of the gate. He suffered a right hamstring strain, went on the DL back on July 3rd, and he and Chris Sale could be rejoining the team soon. From what you hear and what you see, what is the latest on those two?
It seems like, you know, Schwarber is going to be going on a rehab stint at some point soon. I don't think they've given an exact date just because they wanted to kind of get him acclimated. He spent the weekend with the team in St. Pete. At this point, I'm not sure if he's going to go to Detroit with the team or if he's going to maybe come up to Worcester and start rehabbing, but he should be back, you know, maybe within 10 days, 2 weeks. So, you know, they're on the road for a while. So that gives them some time to, you know, get these guys ready before the next homestand. And Chris Sale, after pitching the other day in Worcester, he'll have at least one more rehab start, and then he could be good to go. You know, they haven't said that for sure yet, but I think, you know, if you look at it, the tea leaves, reading those, it seems like he could be back during that homestand, either pitching something like August 12th against the Rays or over the weekend against the Orioles. So his return is imminent, obviously, as well. And, you know, you talk about those two guys, and, you know, the Red Sox have a lot riding on those two guys. Schwarber, their big trade deadline addition, when all their competitors in the AL East went out and got some really good players, and Sale, you know, they obviously didn't go out and get a starting pitcher, and they ended up getting only a couple, you know, depth relievers, nobody flashy in the back of the bullpen. So, you know, their big pitching addition in the second half of the season is obviously Chris Sale. They're counting on a lot from him, and all indications are that it'll be pretty soon that he will be rejoining the Red Sox.
On Saturday in Worcester, as you mentioned, against Buffalo, Sale went five innings, five hits, one run it was earned, one walk, and seven strikeouts. He touched 96 again on the radar gun. It looks as though his arm strength is there, right, Chris? I mean, this was his fourth appearance in rehab, but his first at AAA. He had pitched in the Florida State League twice with AA Portland, and, you know, obviously Saturday with Worcester. I think all signs are pointing towards him being healthy and ready to go as soon as they throw him into the mix. And you know he's an intense competitor, right? We all know that. We saw that back in 2018. I think he's going to put the pedal to the metal and let her rip.
Yeah, and you know what? He's been itching to get back. You know, he's been saying since May or June, you know, if they let me start tomorrow, I would do that. But obviously they're taking a more careful approach. They're, you know, taking him along slowly. And if you look around the league, you can see why. You know, the Yankees had Luis Severino trying to come back from Tommy John. He had multiple setbacks, and, you know, he's now behind Sale. The Mets had Noah Syndergaard. He had setbacks and had to slow it down. So, you know, luckily with Sale, I know there were a few little bumps in the road at the beginning, a neck stiffness and back tightness and a case of COVID during the winter, but nothing involving the arm, nothing involving the mechanics. And so since pretty much the beginning of the regular season, since April or May around there, it's been a very smooth go for him. They've decided to take him along very slowly because you know, they don't want to do something now that screws up 2022 and puts that in jeopardy. So, you know, the Red Sox, you know, it's been frustrating at times, I'm sure, for fans to see them taking it this slowly. But when he comes back full strength, no issues at all, they're going to be kind of rewarded for their patient track there.
I don't have any problem with them taking their time with him, given how many years. How many years does he have left on the contract? Three?
I think this is the first or last year might have been one, or so either three or four. Yeah. You know what? 2020, I don't know if it screwed up everybody else's timeline of things in the world, but it makes me not remember. But he's got through 2024 with a vesting option for 25.
Exactly. That's my point. The essential point is there's many more years left on his deal. And if the Sox think that he can be what he can be later in his career, which is still a very good top of the rotation ace, then you got to protect him now. I mean, look no further than Jacob DeGrom in New York. Even he had a setback over the weekend. He's going to be probably pushed back for another month, and they may get him back, the Mets, in September, but they're not going to rush him. Point being is there's no point at this time to really rush a guy like Chris Sale, especially when you're the Red Sox. And you were swept over the weekend by Tampa Bay. You may not even win the division, but you're still in very good shape in terms of the playoffs. You're, you know, six games still ahead of the New York Yankees. You're in solid playoff position. There's no reason to panic at this point. Now, Chris, I mentioned, you know, Kyle Schwarber, the addition of Kyle Schwarber. What are they going to do with him defensively? I mean, it's, you know, I heard him on the Sunday night broadcast, A-Rod and the ESPN team. And obviously they're, you know, speculating on how much pressure there is going to be on Alex Cora to fit him in defensively.
Right. It's not a clean fit. You know, I think in Chaim Bloom even alluded to this on Friday, talking to reporters, saying, you know, if we could have gone and gotten Anthony Rizzo or, you know, somebody like, and he obviously didn't use the names, but Anthony Rizzo or Carlos Santana, a first baseman like that, who we could just plug in at first base, it would be a much cleaner fit. But whoever was the bat that we thought was an impact bat, he was the guy who was, you know, worth the price we were willing to pay. And so, you know, in the column I wrote Thursday night, right after the deal, around about 3 a.m., you know, it's not the perfect fit, but it's a good problem to have, you know, too many talented players that you're trying to fit in. They're going to try him at first base, which is a big ask, especially a guy coming off a hamstring injury, trying to teach him a new position on the fly as he rehabs. If not, he'll go to the outfield, and that'll mean, you know, fewer at bats for other guys, whether that means Jaron Duran maybe goes back down to AAA if his struggles continue, or Hunter Renfroe and Alex Verdugo get fewer at bats, or Kike Hernandez plays more second base. There's going to be a lot of shuffling. We know Alex Cora likes doing that stuff anyway, so that'll be okay in his book. But, you know, it's not a clean fit, but it's a problem the Red Sox are happy to have. And in a couple weeks, that'll be the case. You know, something important to remember is, if he's back, let's say around August 15th, the roster expands to 28 on September 1st, not 40 like it used to, but still 28 players. So they'll have room to carry, you know, whoever they want. It won't come September 1st and mix and match on a daily basis and use the bench and all that type of stuff. So it'll be interesting. It's you know, when the rumors first started Thursday morning that they were talking about Schwarber, you know, I was texting a couple other people on the beat and kind of we dismissed it, just thinking, oh, well, he's not a fit. He only plays left field and they have too many outfielders already. But it happened, and now they'll kind of piece it together as they go.
So does Kyle Schwarber make the play Bobby Dalbec made in the eighth inning Sunday night at Tampa Bay? I do not think he does. I mean, look, Bobby Dalbec has had his struggles at the plate. That is well documented, and we all know that he is pretty much hit or miss, all or nothing at the plate if you're talking Bobby Dalbec. But the play he made at first base on the chopper, the spinning cue ball shot down to Raffy Devers at third base and scooped that out of the dirt was a very special play, I thought, under pressure.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what we're going to get from Schwarber defensively. You know, he's a guy that, you know, came up as a catcher, obviously, was there a little bit as a rookie with the Cubs, and since then, it's like 99.5% of the time he's played left field. So, you know, it's going to be maybe at times an adventure, but the point is to get his bat in the lineup. We've seen what the Red Sox first baseman have done offensively this season. Like you said, Dalbec has been, you know, other than a couple hot weeks here and there, pretty much in a slump all year. Danny Santana and Marwin Gonzalez, the guys they've tried out there, have been you know, abysmal as well. We've seen Frankie Cordero come up and have a little bit of success here and there in the last couple of weeks, but the Red Sox needed to fill, you know, they can't have a dead spot in their lineup every night. And so they definitely filled that. And come August 15th or so, when Schwarber's back, that will no longer be an issue.
Yeah, I'm just curious to see how Alex Cora, who I think has always been very underrated for the way he manipulates his lineup and fits the puzzle pieces in to make it a productive offensive lineup.
Right. But
defensively, I don't think he gets enough credit for his knowledge of the game and where to position people and put guys position on the field to do the best job they can defensively. And that really helps their pitching staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we saw that in 2018, you know, when they were at their best, you know, on a daily basis, it was, you know, either Holt or Nunez at second, either Pierce or Moreland at first. You know, a lot of those guys are very solid defensively. You know, you look at a guy like Mitch Moreland, who was a Gold Glove candidate all the time. Steve Pierce was solid over there. He mixed and matched. And, you know, the luxury for the Red Sox is they have Kike Hernandez, who they can put in important defensive spots, and he's going to be one of the best defenders on the field. So I think they're happy with that. At times, like I said, we don't know what's going to happen at first base with Schwarber, but it's a risk they're willing to take.
Hansel Robles made his debut Sunday night at Tampa Bay. He's the right-hander they got at the deadline from the Twins. Mm-hmm. For a right-hander, Alex Scherp, who went back to Minnesota, minor league pitcher. And then they also got left-handed pitcher Austin Davis from the Pirates. What do you think those two guys can contribute?
I think, you know, if you're looking at from a Red Sox perspective, they're looking for interesting arms that weren't going to cost you much. Right. I'm sure they had talks with the Cubs about Craig Kimbrell, but you saw what they had to give up. Nick Madrigal, who was their starting second baseman already, who's hitting like 320 in, you know, 85 major league games. And he's out for the rest of this year, but is a guy who's under control forever, has track record of major league success. I mean, if trying to think of who the Red Sox would have to give up, you know, for a guy like Kimbrell, it's a price they weren't willing to pay. So, and Alex Scherf, who's a guy who's had success this year, but a kind of a fringe prospect. And then Michael Chavis, who obviously was just a change of scenery candidate at this point, who had struggled in the last 2 years. The Red Sox didn't give up anything that they thought would meaningfully fit into their plans for the next few years. And in exchange got, you know, two arms that are not the sexiest, flashiest arms out on the trade market, but two guys that they think, okay, we can do something with the stuff, or we can put them in position to succeed. You know, Robles has been around for a while. I think he has like 6 or 7 big league seasons with a few different teams, had some success in Anaheim, and is on a, you know, is a rental, a guy in Davis who is controlled for a few more years. They needed a lefty because, you know, they felt like with Josh Taylor and Darlinson Hernandez, they didn't have enough left-handed depth. Not the flashiest moves. Obviously Schwarber was the big move, but those are the types of guys that they're rentals. They don't cost you much. You bring them into the bullpen and see what they can do. It's just another arm. You know, the real cost is they lost Brandon Workman, who was pitching horribly. So, you know, it's not a big risk, but there's potential payoffs when, you know, you get the Red Sox and every other team, like getting these guys in their lab, say, okay, we have the video on this guy. We think that if we, you know, increase his changeup usage or drop his arm angle a little bit, then he'll become a stud for us in the bullpen. Every team thinks they're smarter than the rest in that regard. And so, you know, we'll see if the Red Sox can do it with these two.
What's really important, Chris, I think, to Chaim Bloom and Red Sox ownership, Sam Kennedy and John Henry et al., is that they didn't have to disrupt what they were trying to do with the farm system. That is to set, rebuild it, right? I mean, build up the stock. Don't dip into it just to make some rental moves here at the trade deadline in 2021 and make sure everything, the key pieces are in place, right, to move forward. And they accomplished that, and they're still in great position to make some type of run in the last 2 months. And then, you know, let the cards fall where they may in October. But the important part of this is that they didn't disrupt the true, you know, blue chip prospects in their system that they're building up.
Right. And Aldo Ramirez, who was the 20-year-old pitcher that they gave up for Schwarber, he's a guy that had kind of risen up prospect rankings this year. But he, if you look at it, was not one of the top 5 or 6 pitching prospects in the system. And that's important, you know. And so I think, you know, you can give up a 20-year-old at low A who has 3 or 4 steps before coming to the majors and feel, you know, better about that than, you know, giving up a Tanner Houck, obviously, or giving up a, you know, even a Brian Mata who's injured.
Yeah, right. either one of those moves. I think we both know. I think everybody knows who follows the Red Sox closely. That was never going to happen. Speaking with Chris Cotillo of Mass Live and MassLive.com, you can follow him on Twitter. You should be doing that if you're a Red Sox fan and want the latest. At Chris Cotillo, all one word. Hey, sports fans, Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season in full swing, of course, and you can track all of the action coming down the final 2 months of the season, the pennant stretch, if you will, at Bet Online. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all of your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and of course, all of your UFC MMA action. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all of the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Before the next pitch, head on over to betonline.ag on your laptop or mobile device and take advantage of their 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on all of the action. Don't forget to use that promo code CLNS50 to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Back with Chris Cotillo covering the Red Sox for Mass Live, doing a wonderful job doing that. Before we get back into more Red Sox, Chris, I want to ask you about what you're doing on Monday nights now that might be of particular interest to young journalists trying to get into the field and do what both of us are doing.
Yeah, it's been a project that I've been doing for a long time now, almost a year. You know, it was just kind of during the off season. Red Sox obviously weren't in the playoffs last year. COVID was still raging, not a lot going on. So I decided to start hosting a Zoom workshop for aspiring sports writers. I've had probably six or seven sessions and in different formats here and there. But, you know, the gist of it is a group session where we talk about the different things in the industry, whether it's social media or how to write a feature or break news or do a podcast, all those types of things. And then in addition to that, a one-on-one session, and that's usually work review where, you know, they'll send me kind of the work that they've done in the past and we go through it or edit it and look at the strengths and weaknesses of it. So, you know, the best part for me is, and I've had, you know, over 100 people of all ages come through it and trying to perfect their crafts. The best part is I've learned from them. So it's been really cool. The next one starts tonight, actually, on Monday night, have a few people already signed up. So it's a cool little side project during baseball season and during the off season, just to meet a lot of cool new people. And I'm telling you, you know, the people that have come through, and I always say it's aspiring sports writers, but a lot of them have already surpassed me in definitely talent level. So the future is bright.
Toughest question you've been asked during these sessions. Can you think of one or two questions that even stump you?
Yeah, well, a lot of people ask if I could change, you know, things about my career or change things about my path to this point, you know, what would it be? What would I do? And I would say other than working with Chris Smith, I always say not realizing earlier that, you know, you have to really diversify your skill set early in your career to where, you know, as you know, and it's not just file one story a day. If you do a podcast one day, you write a feature one day, you do an opinion column, and you're asked to do a lot of things, especially on a beat.
Versatility. It's the really the essence of what we do now in this journalism industry. And without it, you're just going to be a one trick pony. And we see how that works for a lot of athletes in sports, not only baseball. We see it across all major sports these days. You can't just do one thing. The more things you can do, the more valuable you are. The old Bill Belichick idiom that he always preaches to his players, it's true in journalism as well. Let's get back to the Red Sox and your takeaways from over the weekend, Chris. I thought the Sunday night game was a fabulous baseball game to watch. It was tight. It was close. It was between the top two teams in the AL East, and certainly you put the Astros in terms of their competitiveness right at the top of the American League. They have the best record. But in terms of the competitiveness and the rivalry between the Rays and the Red Sox over the last many years, I thought Sunday night was one of those classic games.
Yeah, and you don't always see, primetime games at the top, so that's always – it's interesting to see the ESPN backdrop and Viscurgin and A-Rod at Tropicana Field. You almost never ever see that. It's always Red Sox, Yankees, or whatever. But, you know, this is going to be a dogfight like we saw over the weekend. you know, the Red Sox have actually played pretty well against the Rays so far this season before this weekend. And the last couple of years that had not been the case. You know, the Rays came in, I think, last year in 2020, and they just brutalized the Red Sox in a four-game sweep at Fenway. There was one game that was like 19-8 or something like that, just a horrible afternoon matinee that kind of summed up the whole Red Sox season. This year, the teams are going at it. It's obviously, you know, not over. You know, the Red Sox will welcome the Rays back in a week from tomorrow for three games at Fenway. And then they go back to the Trop for a four-game set at the end of August. Then the Rays come back, I think, September 5th or 6th. So there's a lot of games left to be played between these two teams, which sets up for a very, very interesting race. You know, the Red Sox are obviously playing a lot of divisional teams. They'll have a little break from that right now with, Detroit in the next 3 days. But, you know, they're going to have to beat. They're not going to have to sit and scoreboard watch, you know, for the next couple of weeks or next couple of months. It's, you know, you're going against the guys you have to beat, and they better do it.
Yeah, and that's going to really dictate whether or not they, A, have a chance of winning the AL East, or B, worst case scenario, holding on to a playoff spot. I mean, I said earlier in this podcast that they're in very good shape, and, you know, I think they're in position to really, if they play even average baseball down the stretch, you know, they're 19 games over 500 still. If they play, you know, let's say 5-6 games above 500, that puts them at 93, 94, maybe 95 wins. That should be good enough to get into the playoffs, you think?
Yeah. Well, and also considering, I think everybody had them predicted for 500 or lower to start the season, I think they'll take that too. But yes, I think that range is probably going to be good enough. And, you know, there is obviously the huge reward for winning the division. And we've seen that, you know, time and time again, that wild card game, not just in terms of, hey, you have to face a sudden death game just to start postseason, but it screws up, you know, lining up your pitching for the beginning of the postseason as well. So that's something, you know, they don't probably want to screw around with. If they have, you know, their choice, obviously they're going to win the division, get that spot in the ALDS to start. But, you know, on the flip side, the Red Sox have never been in a wild card game. So it'd be something interesting, something new. I think, you know, if the stakes weren't as high, I think fans would enjoy that a little bit more, but, yeah, that would be something new for them.
I do think I'm still not a big fan of the wild card format. One game go, you know, win or lose, go home. Mm-hmm. I like the best 2 out of 3. That at least if you lose the one game in heartbreaking fashion, you can come back the next day. And that's the one thing about last year's playoff format I really did embrace. I hated the fact that everybody was in the bubble and in, you know, stadiums. I don't like the bubble idea of sports anyway, but I did like the 2 out of 3, and I don't know if baseball will ever consider going to that long term. It'll be interesting to find out. But I want to ask you something, Erod. What does Alex Cora do with him coming down the stretch? Because right now, if you take a look at his numbers, they're not good, Chris. He's 7-6, 5.60 ERA, and his whip is all the way up to 1.41. That is not good for a guy that I think coming into the season we assumed would be a top three pitcher in the rotation, and he's not close to that.
Right. You know what? The number that I always see, you know, we're looking at Eduardo Rodriguez in this season, it is innings. And, you know, at the beginning of the year, it didn't seem like he was going to be able to take on a full workload. They kept saying that, but it, you know, wasn't certain. He's already at 100 innings as we sit here, you know, with 2 months to go. And so I think you told the Red Sox that at the beginning of the season, they would have been thrilled about it, especially after everything he went through last year. Now, that aside, he has not been good. This is a guy who finished 6th in the American League Cy Young voting in 2019, was poised for a big season last year, came in really good shape in spring training, and then obviously the myocarditis and COVID and everything ended up canceling that season for him. You know, and at the beginning of the year, I think you could say, all right, maybe there's a little bit of rust. But in April, he was actually really sharp. And since then, it's been where the struggles have come. I think Alex Cora and the pitching coaches have really thought in the last few outings that he has started to turn a corner, at least in terms of stuff. You know, in the few outings before that start against the Yankees where he had the migraine symptoms, he was at least, you know, starting to throw the ball better. The changeup was a little bit slower. There was more of a difference in velocity between his pitches. And you look at the start, it started in the Bronx a couple weeks ago, was very strong. It started in Oakland, 6 scoreless innings, was really strong. So there were signs that he was starting to turn the corner. And then, you know, 2 unfortunate outings on the last homestand. One, he just had a migraine, had to be taken out. And the second one, you know, you don't know how his how things were disrupted for him in between starts. It kind of seems like, you know, when you're taken out and think if you're not sure that you're even going to make that next start, you probably can't go through your normal progression. So, you know, for Erod, there's a lot on him, you know, because the Red Sox are counting on, okay, maybe there's going to be some rust at the beginning. We've seen some rust here and there and some downturn from him, but now it's August and he's healthy. You know, migraine symptoms aside, he's healthy and it's time for, you know, the Red Sox really need him to turn the corner. So a big start coming up for him this week. I think they all are for him going forward, and the Red Sox need better performance. It's as simple as that.
I would not disagree with that. It's a big week coming up. I think the Red Sox, they absolutely have to take two of three, if not sweep all three in Detroit, considering they have four games coming up in Toronto. And that will be back in Toronto, the Red Sox first trip there since 2019. Of course, so the Blue Jays have returned back home. The Saturday situation was going to be one game, but it's now two games because one of those games in Florida, or I'm sorry, in Buffalo was rained out. So they're going to have a seven inning doubleheader on Saturday, 2 7 inning games. And then of course the Sunday afternoon game wraps up what has turned into a 10 game road trip. I'm fascinated to see what happens with the Red Sox north of the border against the Toronto team. Everybody keeps telling me, Chris, watch out for the Blue Jays, watch out for the Blue Jays. Right. They crush the Red Sox one night, and then the Red Sox come back and beat them up the next night. I just don't see the Blue Jays, who come into action this week in fourth place. They are now behind the Yankees by a game. They're 54-48. They can mash like nobody's business. I get that, but I just don't think the pitching is there.
Yeah, that's the thing. You look at their run differential, and you know the Rays are +112. Red Sox are +48. The Yankees are even run differential for the whole year. And Toronto's at +107, which has them in like the top three or four in the entire American League. You know, like you said, when their offense get going, they can put up 15 runs a night. We've seen that happen at Fenway two or three times this year. You know, the blowout on that Sunday in June, the blowout the other night. I mean, it can happen, but the pitching isn't there. You know, luckily for them, they acquired, you know, arguably the best non-Scherzer pitcher on the market last week. Jose Barrios going to the Jays, not just for the rest of this year, but for next year as well. That's a big addition, and he'll help. You know, I think they need to add some more pitching over the winter to get themselves into real contention for next year, but they're dangerous. We've seen that time and time again throughout the season. You know, the Red Sox have played pretty well against them, but you've seen, you know, when they get going with the bats, those games are blowouts. And, you know, Toronto Rogers Center should be rocking this week it's this weekend after everything that's gone on. And luckily for the Red Sox, that'll be the last time they face the Jays for the entire year. So if they get hot down the stretch, it's not going to be the Red Sox problem, at least directly. But four big games, you know, this is a big road trip. Did not start out the way the Red Sox needed it to or wanted it to. They need to beat up on the Tigers, like you said. And then, you know, hopefully, you know, I always say with a doubleheader, you just want to split it and, you know, move on. But, you know, take three or four, or at least split with the Blue Jays and come home on a good note before a big series against the Rays and a series where you might have Chris Sale joining the team.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Chris. Thanks for hopping back in your old seat, if you will, and talking some Red Sox. I think it's going to be a fascinating, you know, final 8 weeks of the season. And I think the Red Sox are going to hold on, but that's why they play the games. We'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank everybody for downloading today's podcast. Thank our terrific guest, Chris Cotillo, covering the Red Sox for masslive.com. You can follow him on Twitter as well. You definitely should be doing that. All one word, ChrisCotillo. Chris, thanks again for joining us. And I also want to thank our great sponsor, betonline.ag. For Chris Cotillo, I'm Mike Petralia, and this has been the Red Sox Beat podcast powered by CLNS Media.